This talk will be in English. Unfortunately, we don't have the luxury to translate it, so I'm sorry for that one. So if you are sitting close to the if you have free seats from you to the middle, it would be awesome if you could fill it up. And yeah, who of you was on demonstrations against Article 13? So you know what amongst others Amelia will be talking about. Amelia is somebody that I personally asked to come here and talk to us about this issue, which is important and would tackle us in the national debate in the next months and years. And I'm very, very, very pleased that she made the effort to come here, and give a warm applause for Amelia and her talk about the EU and what
Hello, everyone, and thank you for coming here at this time of the night to talk with me about this copyright reform. Some of you, I saw you raised the hands that you already protested, so I think you know what we're talking about. But my presentation here, I wanted to be a little bit more explanatory and then can maybe start a discussion or a debate. So to introduce myself, I'm Emilia Gevropoulou, I'm from Greece. For the last 2 years and a half, I live in Brussels. I worked with European Digital Rights, an NGO working on digital rights in Brussels. And the last 1 year and a half, I'm in the European Parliament, working as a digital policy advisor for the Greens, the Greens group, and now working as an accredited parliamentary assistant for MEP Yulia Reda, who is soon leaving the parliament, unfortunately, but we have four new pirates joining us in the parliament. So hopefully we can continue this more revolutionary work in favor of our digital rights. So the title that I chose for this presentation might look a little bit dystopian, and I would prefer if in 2084 we don't end up with a dystopia, but maybe we can work it out in our national implementation of this law, and we can fix it in a way that we like. So this is how it's going to be. I don't know who of you has some experience on how legislation is being drafted on an EU level. So I will start with a video produced by the European Parliament, which explains a little bit how the normal procedure is. And then I will move on to the copyright law, the current copyright law, the future copyright law, and I will finish with a few ideas that we can all take home tonight and we can think about in the next months. So I will leave you to watch the video and I will be back in a couple of minutes. But we don't have sound.
Can propose directives or legally binding regulations.
Let me start it again.
Unlike the state of things in member states with parliaments initiating legislation, only the European Commission can propose directives or legally binding regulations. Neither the states nor the European Parliament have this power. But these proposals never just fall from the sky. The way it works, the European Commission listens to views across Europe for or against the creation of new laws. At this stage, MEPs are involved in the process, often adopting recommendations. Since 2012, European citizens can also directly request new draft laws. For that, at least 1 million people from no fewer than 7 countries must sign a petition. Having listened to all sides, the European Commission finally presents its bill. This is the start of a long legislative process that generally takes 12 to 18 months. The draft is then sent to the European Council, representing the member states, and the European Parliament, representing the citizens. In 80% of cases, the two institutions have equal power. This is called the ordinary legislative procedure. There's no question of legislating on everything. The Union can make laws on such issues as the environment, agriculture, consumer protection and transport, for example. The list is growing, but the member states retain an absolute veto on social security, on tax, foreign affairs or defence. But back to the bills. Before being adopted, they go through the institutional mill. The European Council and Parliament can amend the draft according to their interests, especially if majority positions emerge. Since member states and MEPs rarely agree first time round, they have to negotiate. There are two possible scenarios. Either the two institutions find a compromise and the draft law can be adopted by MEPs after a vote, or there's no agreement and the negotiations must continue. If the negotiations fail once, the clock starts ticking to find agreement before a certain deadline. That fails, the bill is simply binned, and the whole process starts all over again. But in reality, that happens very rarely. When there's agreement, the new European law is officially adopted, and all member states must then apply it. Well, almost. Sometimes member states receive what's known as a derogation, the right to delayed implementation. If they fail to implement, the European Commission, as guardian of the EU treaties, intervenes to punish non-implementation. And if that fails, the European Court of Justice takes over. In the worst cases, states can be ordered to pay heavy fines, but that's another story.
So I hope you found this animation a little bit fun to understand how the ordinary legislative procedure works in the EU. And if not, what you need to remember is that these are the three, this Triforce, like from The Legend of Zelda, is representing the powers of the European legislative procedure, with the Commission having the biggest power because it's the one that can actually make the proposals that the other two institutions can put in the mill and blend and come up with special proposals. And then if they agree, the law passes, etc., etc. And of course, the Court of Justice that it was mentioned at the very end. I will also mention it at the very end of my presentation. Now, moving to the timeline of copyright. Of course, copyright existed before 2001, but in the European Union, 2001 is the last update that we had on copyright. In 2001, the InfoSoc Directive was adopted, and I will pause and make a clarification here. What is a directive and what is a regulation in the EU? So normally we all know that in our countries we have laws. These are similar to the regulations. So when the EU adopts a regulation, this is adopted by all member states equally as a text. Let's take, for example, the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, is adopted as proposed and voted in the by the institutions. But a directive gives directions to the member states on how to implement their laws. So it's a piece of legislation that says, we suggest this and try to put it in your law, which ends up usually in 28 different laws. And with copyright is particularly difficult and hard because exactly the need to reform copyright came primarily from the evolution of technology, but also from the failure of the InfoSoc Directive to harmonize the law in all 28 member states. And to accomplish the digital single market that the EU wants to accomplish. So the 2001 directive refers to when a work is protected, against which acts, and also provides for some exceptions on this protection. So when someone can actually, for example, reproduce something and do it legally. There are 21 exceptions in the text, and only one is mandatory for all member states. And this is the temporary reproduction of works for non-commercial and for strictly technical reasons. Let's say that you watch a video, and the time that you watch the video, a copy is created at the same time on your computer, so you can't do it otherwise, so okay, this is an exception, and everyone has to adopt it. But the other 20 exceptions are optional. And we end up with a variety of different laws. So, for example, if we take the quotations for a critic or a review of a movie, of a game, the countries have different laws. So in Greece, we do have the exception, but in Slovenia, there is no exception for this use of quotations. Another example of from our everyday life is the incidental inclusion of a work. Let's say that I'm taking a video of my cat doing something really funny, and on the background there is a pop song playing, and I record this by accident. Or I record a video of an incident on the street that I want to report, and I want to publish it on YouTube and people learn about it, and accidentally I record a song playing in the cafeteria that is really close. So, for example, in Greece, we don't have this exception. In other countries, we do. In Greece, we have an exception for incidental inclusion of an architecture, of a building of architecture importance, but in other countries, we don't. So, for example, you might be surprised, or not, to know that, for example, the lights of the Eiffel Tower, the way they appear, are copyrighted. So normally you can't upload a video that is recording the Eiffel Tower lights. Or the Little Mermaid of Copenhagen is also copyright protected. So, don't know. So the legislators realized that there was a problem. And Julia Reda came into the parliament with a goal to reform copyright. So what she did was, outside the ordinary legislative procedure, she created this own initiative report, which is initiated by the parliament, is following the same procedure, is voted by all the MEPs, the members of the European Parliament, and when passed, it is sent to the Commission as a proposal. So in 2015, Julia Reda issued her report, which mentioned the basic points that need to be reformed. Amongst others is the harmonization of the terms in the law, the balance of interest, the mandatory exceptions, safeguards for the public domain, for quotations, for linking, for parody, for text and data mining, and for the freedom of panorama, which is basically the freedom to take pictures or video of things that are surrounding us. People say that this was a very good report. So we were expecting something really good, less good from the Commission, but something good. So in 2016, in September, the Commission announced their proposal. And it was like those days in the summer that you wake up and you want to see the sun, but instead of that, you see a thunder. So the proposal was a mess. Indeed, it had harmonized a few exceptions, very few. There is an exception on text and data mining, an exception for education, an exception for preservation of works for cultural heritage institutions. There are some obligations for transparency between members when they negotiate licenses. And there were Articles 11 and 13. The process took 3 years, almost, until the final text is adopted. And it was a battle between the member states, the members of the European Parliament, the groups in the European Parliament were split, and it was a mess. So I'm really looking forward to see what will happen in 2084. So, moving to the most controversial articles of this report. For me and for us and for my team, the most controversial ones were Article 11 and Article 13. I will try not to bore you with useless information, but I would like to explain a little bit what these articles are. So Article 11 is now Article 15 in the final proposal. So Article 15 is a neighboring right for online news publishers. And I will pause again to explain to you what this neighboring right means. So copyright means basically, when do we have copyright? Copyright is an expression of an idea. So basically, once I express my idea and I put it into the physical world, or digital, but like something that is outside my head, is copyrighted. And that's it. No other administrative burden or anything else. So what it has to be, it's an expression of an original creative work. But a neighboring right is a presumption of a copyright and is created to help some right holders, like, for example, actors, performers, musicians, to declare their right and to seek some benefits from it. So the online news publishers basically do have a right from the moment they publish their work. From the moment they create it, they have the right. So why do they need a neighboring right? So basically with a neighboring right, they can declare that they have the right and they can forbid everyone else from using it further. So as I mentioned, we are talking about the news publishers, so not the journalists that some people wanted to say that are covered and are actually the target of this law, the journalists that will earn from this Article 11. No, the publishers will earn, and if they want, they will give something back to the journalists, but there is nothing in the law that says that this has to happen. So the publishers, and not the journalists, can forbid the use of their work by news aggregators, search engines, social media, other news publishers. And what can they actually forbid? The use of the whole text? Yes, sure. Maybe a small extract? Yes. A few words? Yes. The title? Of course. How about the hyperlink that may include the headline as well? That also. So there is an exception in this legislation that says that small extracts and individual words are excluded. But this is not very clear what it covers, and also it's not mandatory for all member states to implement it like that. So they can actually put it in the blender and do whatever they feel like. So if we can use again an example, we have a journalist who writes an article. Immediately, because of the relationship that they have with the publisher, the work relationship, they transfer their rights to the publisher immediately. And the publisher puts out the article on a football match, like, okay, this team won over that team with these points. Or a political meeting, and immediately everyone else is excluded from using the facts in their own article or expression. So who is benefited from this article? First of all, the big news publishers, as you can imagine, because they will have the power to step over the others. Collective management societies, which are societies that represent right holders. We have it a lot in music, so there is a collecting society that is basically speaking for the others and give some money back. They earn all the amount of money and they give something back to the publishers, for example, in this case. Who are benefited and not benefited at the same time? The big online platforms. The big online platforms will have the money and resources to deal with this right in one way or the other. And who is affected negatively? First of all of us, the users. Our freedom of expression is limited. Our right to access information is significantly limited behind licenses and the decisions of the few. Small and medium publishers who may not be able to negotiate for selling their licenses, so probably they will have to give them away for free or go into a collecting society and very few money back just to have their articles published. And small and medium platforms that will not be able to pay huge amounts to get licenses from big publishers. It's a bit dystopian, or not yet. And not to forget that Article 11 has failed twice in the EU. The first case is Germany, where a similar law was applied. And what happened was that Google got free licenses from everyone, so they could show anything else. But, for example, other search engines, let's say DuckDuckGo, didn't have the same treatment, so they had to pay licenses. In Spain, Google failed to have the same successful negotiation. So what happened was that Google News closed, and then the publishers realized how they were losing revenue from all the clicks that we do every time we are looking for something on Google and we click on whatever we find first. And I will close Article 11 here and I will move to Article 13, now Article 17 of the final text. So Article 13 changed over the course of the negotiations. Initially, it was about measures, technical measures, that can be used to filter, to prevent copyright infringement, thus to filter content to prevent infringements. This alerted everyone. There were protests. There was a big cry out. And they realized that the text was wrong, or basically they realized that the people realized what was happening. So I remember being in a meeting and having an MEP say, oh, I don't want this protest to continue, we have to change it. And we were like, that's nice, that's going to the right direction. So let's see what you have to propose. So what they proposed was even worse. They took out all the technical or anything that could imply any filtering system. And they came up with a three-step process. So first of all, platforms had an obligation to obtain licenses for all works, everywhere, anywhere, whatever works, which is, as you may imagine, impossible. Second, they had to do everything they could to prevent copyright infringements. How? No technical measure suggested, but how else can someone do that? And third, if there is an infringement on their website or platform, they are liable for that infringement, and sanctions will follow. So I will do another pause to speak to you about the current situation and our current law, which is in the e-commerce directive that I mentioned on the slides. So basically, the legislator up until now had recognized that the amount of works that are being uploaded online are huge, and it's impossible to monitor everything at, like real time. So when they were when they tried to regulate the intermediary liability, they said in Article 14 of the e-commerce directive that no platform is liable unless they had knowledge of the infringement, or they had the reasonable grounds to have this knowledge, like really they needed to have it like in front of their eyes. And if they acted upon this knowledge, so if they didn't act, they were liable. All they needed to do is like have knowledge. If they had no knowledge, there was no liability. And then Article 15 complements that and says that platforms are not obliged to monitor in a general way their platform. So these were safeguards that were keeping a balance, I believe, between the platforms and the users. But this new law has explicitly mentions that Article 14 and 15 are not to be are not in line with Article 13. So basically, they trespass these articles to actually force high liabilities and general monitoring windows. So basically, to conclude, this article means that nothing will be directly available. It will be unavailable for legal reasons. Everything will be filtered. The decision on what is legal and what is not will be based on algorithms and not any other independent source like the courts. So basically, if there is an idea of something illegal, it will be blocked, and then people are given a redress mechanism to actually ask the platform to put the content back and explain why it wasn't illegal. So basically, those of you who know the presumption of innocence, which is basically one of our fundamental rights, this no longer exists. So if there is an idea of something illegal, you are innocent, then you can just ask the platform to think otherwise. So I'll give two more examples. The incidental inclusion of a work that we mentioned before. So in Spain, there is an exception. In Italy, there isn't. So how will the algorithm realize if the inclusion it was intentional or not? Maybe I wanted to record this song and make revenue out of it. Or the memes that we all love, I hope, which are basically a form of parody, of expressing something funny or a parody. How can an algorithm realize this parody when humans don't realize parody in real life? So the redress mechanism will be too late for that. It will be too late to put up a video of parody or a video that is recording and reporting something a few days after the incident. It will be obsolete at that moment. So who benefits from this article? First of all, companies that develop content recognition technologies, such as Audible Magic, who is the company that lobbied heavily the commission for this legislation, or Google with Content ID that already exists And I think Facebook also put filters now on the platform and the messenger. Who is more or less affected, but not that much, are big platforms that will have the human resources and economic resources to develop these filters or to respond and react in a quick and easy way against any sanctions. And who is affected negatively? Of course, users. Our freedom of speech, again, is limited. Our right to access information, our privacy, because when something is blocked, this means that they have to keep a log on this incident, and you have to go back to it, which means they have to keep more and more data on these incidents. And, of course, small and medium enterprises that will not have the human resources or economic resources to build filters or to respond to any sanctions. So, I don't know if any of this makes sense to you, if this law makes sense. If yes, I would like to speak to you afterwards. But I think only magic can solve this situation in a very balanced way. If you don't agree with this, I'm really happy, and I would like you to join our effort, collective effort, to make something even now, because it's not too late. Of course, we lost the votes in the European Parliament and the Council, but it's not too late. We have been called bots, mob, jihadists, because we were trying to protect our freedoms online, to keep the internet free and open for everyone. We have been bullied, but also we have been called bullies. But we will not stop now, because we still have a chance, and I will explain it how later. The campaigns that were active until now, and you can find online, and they have a lot of information on the issue, are Fix Copyright, Save Your Internet, Save Your Memes, and there was a huge petition signed by over 5 million people on change.org that was asking the Parliament to reject these articles. So, is it too late? As I said before, no, it's not too late. Already, there have been movements to reject Article 13 now. Poland has already addressed the Court of Justice of the European Union, and they have put a proposal against Article 13. I don't have information on this right now, but as far as I know, it's not going very, very well. But hopefully we will have more information soon. And of course, I will be happy to speak with any of you who is interested and keep you updated on this afterwards. And we are almost done. Basically, we have entered the phase of national implementation, which means that the law is there, and the countries have a limited amount of years to implement it in their national laws. Luckily, in Greece, if we follow the GDPR example, we have many, many years to implement it, because still it's not implemented, the GDPR. Article 11 is kind of difficult to change. There is not much flexibility. But what we should ask for are strong exceptions for small texts, for headlines, for snippets, which are, again, like small texts, but in a different format that some politicians need to understand better what they are, and of course hyperlinks and links that link to something, to content that is publicly available, and this should not be forbidden. On Article 13 is a little bit more complicated. If you are from Italy, Luxembourg, Netherlands, Poland, Finland, and Sweden, you have better chances because these are the countries that actively said no to Article 13 publicly. They were against Article 13 most of the time, and you have a better luck there. So what we are aiming for in Article 13 is to keep legal content online and intact, but at the same moment to prevent a general monitoring of the platforms, which is a bit contradictory on how this balance can be struck. So what we need is clear definitions in the law, who are the beneficiaries, who have the obligations, and maybe restrict these definitions to as less people as possible. We should have a positive obligation for platforms to keep content, legal content, online, and to respect the exceptions that are already in our national laws. And of course, to keep the current situation ongoing, which means to keep this notice and takedown procedure, which means that when illegal content is spotted, the user receives a notification that illegal content was spotted and is kindly asked to remove it or take it down. Then the user responds to that and either takes it down or says, no, it's legal, it's my right, and there is a further investigation on that, but still the content is there. No one removes the content, their expression, before that. And of course, to enforce this right, not via privatized enforcement, but via the platforms, but via impartial bodies like the courts. So something, I mean, how to do that? How to ask that? So I hope that in your countries you have at least one NGO that is active on digital rights. If not, there are European NGOs and there are politicians that you can speak to directly. And they are not gods, they are people like everyone. And you have every right to call them, to send them an email, no matter what. After all, we vote for them, both on a European level and on a national level. So we have literally every right to contact them. And during these years, we have been contacted on that matter. And the emails were coming in waves. And maybe that's why they called us bots. But it's people who sent those emails. And the MEPs noticed it and reacted, of course. So don't be afraid to act. And I hope we will not end up in a dystopia. I hope we still have hope and energy to act. I'll be here today and tomorrow until noon, and I'll be happy to listen to your questions and hopefully be successful in answering them, or either now, or you can contact me basically on Twitter, or you can find me somewhere else. And we can continue the discussion. Thank you very much for staying.
So, I think we have plenty of time left, and afterwards the theater is free. So, do you have any questions for the speaker? Don't be shy.
Hey. I only entered the room like halfway through the thing, but what about all these things where like one post gets reposted and reposted all the time? That would be illegal then with the new changes.
It depends on the content. So normally, if something is legal, it can be reposted as much as you want. But if it's, for example, an article of a publisher, yes, this will be illegal.
Every post is an article of the publisher, the one that posted it.
Of a news publisher, I don't see who asked the question.
But don't you think that every post is some copyrighted work of the one that posted it?
Based on the definition of copyright, yes. But there are things that we should keep in mind, like if someone wants to have a copyright on their work, usually they declare it and people should respect it. So copyright is really complicated. For example, in presentations, I will use a different example. So when we want to use an image, usually we search it online. We search images with this keyword, and then we take the image, we save it in our computer, and we use it. But we never see who has a right, if they have the right. So it's really difficult to recognize when there is a right. Normally, there is a right, but people who really want to protect their copyright, they declare it clearly, let's say, in a book. In the first page, you have copyright since this year, but the rest of the book, you can copy and print it as you want, but you infringe copyright. So it really depends on each case how the person wants to protect copyright and if there is copyright. But based on the definition that I said before, yes, every expression is copyrighted.
Okay, I have a question about the slide for about Article 13 or 17. I'm not sure I understood it correctly. So, was it the other one? No, I think it was the. No, I think another one, a later one. I'm not sure which one. So you talked about the national implementations, and you cited, or there was one point about something from a recital. Yeah, exactly that one. So is your point that basically we should lobby or protest to get this balance into the national implementation, or are you saying that this the requirement to have this balance and that legal content needs to stay online is like already implicit in the current directive, so and that maybe would mean that, for example, someone could sue that the national implementation is not in line with the directive if it doesn't correctly implement this balance.
Yeah, no, I understand your point. The law, because it's a directive, it's left to the member states to implement it based on the text, but they can shift. They can implement it according to their law. They don't have to implement it as such. So they can deviate, or they can use words in their translations that are according to their liking. They will not change what it says, so they can't say we don't use Article 13 since it's mandatory, but we adopt it in such a way that has the most limited negative effect. So I don't know if this answers your question.
Okay. So do we have any other question for the speaker? I think they want everybody wants to get to their chunk.
Yes, yes, I know. I'm starting between your night, so I don't want to.
So I want to thank you for the great talk and for being here, and I'm sure you'll be around for questions and discussions, and yeah, you can go enjoy your chunk and think about what you heard. And if you write your Member of Parliament, think about it. Don't use Gmail. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.